This is Tea Earl Grey Hot, an unofficial Star Trek fan podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network. Absolute Candor. Hello and welcome to episode 26 of Tea Earl Grey Hot, an unofficial Star Trek fan podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network. My name is Yannick, I'm the French guy from Switzerland, and joining me tonight, someone who is 210 hours of walking away from me. That's 26 days at 8 hours a day. It's my friend Dave. Hello, Dave. How are you?
Hello, Yannick. I'm fine. I'm curious as to how you worked that one out.
I asked my friend Google.
Interesting factoid, actually, that I think roughly 26 days is how long it would take to walk the Camino de Santiago.
Oh.
From somewhere in France over to the Portuguese coast. Mm-hmm. It's actually a walk I would like to do at some point in the future.
Which is probably a lot easier to do than walking from Switzerland to Great Britain.
Well, yeah, with that big hunk of water in the way.
Yeah, I guess
26 miles of, or 40 kilometers of water to walk over.
I'm pretty sure those 210 hours don't take this into account.
Isn't there a tunnel?
Yes, there is a tunnel, yes.
There is, but you can't walk it.
No.
Oh, okay.
Well, and also joining us tonight, as you probably already heard, is for the second time, our friend Nate joining us for this episode of Star Trek Picard. Hello, Nate!
Hello there! Have you calculated how many hours of walking or days of walking it would take to go from here to...
No.
No, okay.
No, I haven't.
I don't know how you would accomplish that. You have to wait till the northern caps freeze over.
Yeah, or I guess I'm pretty sure. Yes, the 210 hours of walking don't take the ferry into account. So,
can you walk from the eastern coast of Russia to the western coast of Canada still?
I think only when it's
going up north,
totally frozen over. Maybe.
Right.
I mean, I wouldn't want to do that.
No, probably not. But it's possible.
When it's that cold, I'm not outside.
I'd rather wait for the invention of a transporter, you know. It's going to be easier.
Soon.
Or a husky.
Yeah.
Or a husky. A team of huskies.
Yeah. So in this episode, we're going to review Absolute Candor, Star Trek Picard Season 1, Episode 4. And then, if we have time, because it's going to be a long review, we're going to discuss Star Trek Picard with Nate. So if everybody's ready.
Very much so.
We are going to start the review of Star Trek Picard Season 1, Episode 4, Absolute Candor. So, in the prologue, we are in 2385, and Jean-Luc Picard visits a Romulan relocation hub on Vashti. The settlement is lively, and the Romulans seem to be getting accustomed to their new lives as they go about their daily routines. When Picard beams down, many Romulans are excited to see him, and rush over to him for any updates on the evacuation of Romulan worlds from the impending supernova. Picard is quick to assure them that the Federation will not abandon them and will help them settle in their new life. Picard looked like an explorer with his hat and nice white costume.
He did a little bit. There's a little bit of Indiana Jones going on there.
I thought it played into the general how Star Trek tends to always have like old Star Trek culture of our culture stops at about 1930. That seemed to kind of fall in line with that.
Yes. It certainly seems to be in that rough timeline.
Yeah. Yeah. A young boy sees Picard, hurries to the Kuat-Milat dueling, and informs the sisters that the Admiral is coming. Shortly thereafter, Picard enters and greets everyone. Elnor is shy at first, but one of the warrior's nuns, Zani, tells him to make himself seen, noting that he's been talking excitedly about Picard since his last visit. Elnor eagerly asks Picard if he brought him a present, and Picard presents him a copy of The Three Musketeers. Zanni rebukes Elnor's excited reactions, saying that Picard is not fond of emotional displays or children. Picard reassures Elnor that he's actually very fond of him, promising to read the book with the boy later on. Picard thanks Zanni and the Quiet Millet for their recent help in the successfully relocating over 10,000 of refugees and says that the Federation is in debt to them. He also gives Zanni some sweet Hanifak as a gift. I don't know what Hanifak is, but it looked like chocolates or something.
It looks like some kind of candy, sweets, yeah. Whatever you want to call it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd have tried
did you
it.
Notice? Yeah. Did you notice that Picard, he seemed very, he seemed younger. I know it's the same actor and at the same point, but the character seemed younger and more lively. I don't know if that's a correct word for that. It didn't look like the Picard from the current time. No, I was going to say the present, but yeah. For the current, with more. It looks, you know, old and tired. And in this flashback, he looked a lot younger.
There's the digital. They use AI to make people look younger.
De-aging.
But he could also be acting older. I mean, he's only 79, right? Like in real life. So he could, I mean, I know some 79-year-olds that are just as fast of a runner as I am and are just as sprightly. Actually, I know 80-year-olds that are just as sprightly. Like, they don't look old. So he could very well be acting, you know, as far as, like, acting in older age.
Yeah, and I fully agree with that. I think there's one of two ways. Either he's acting older in the current timeline, or he is deliberately acting as if he's younger in order to identify the fact that we're talking 14 years ago.
Yeah.
They have to do something in order to give a visual difference between the Picard of 2399 and the Picard of 2385.
Yeah, I think that might be a little bit of both. I'm pretty sure he can play that. Mark, who is in our chat room on YouTube, says that the voice is always giving him away as being old. So, yeah, that's true. It was the same voice. So if you had your eyes closed, you wouldn't make get the difference. But yeah, I think visually, whether it was CGI or not, he looked younger. And that was, I mean, even if they used CGI, it was a nice touch to actually think about doing that and making him look younger in this flashback. As they eat and speak, Picard notes that it must be difficult for Elnor, being the only boy in a house full of women, as the Quiet Millet is, by tradition, an all-female organization. Zanni agrees that Elnor is loved, but does not belong with them. Picard promises that he will find a more suitable place for Elnor to live as soon as he can.
This, to me, explains why there appears to be such a strong bond between Picard and Elnor. I hadn't realised this up to this point. I knew nothing about the Quiet Millet. I don't think anybody did at this point, but I hadn't picked up on the fact that it was an all-female thing.
Really?
Mm.
Okay. Yes, but because I was surprised to see Picard react as he did with Elnor. We know that it doesn't... Well, during the next-gen era, he didn't really like children. It was surprising, but so there must be a very strong bond between them.
Yes.
Elnor and Picard, in the meantime, bond with each other on multiple ways as Picard reads The Three Musketeers and gives Elnor fencing lessons. They are enjoying their time together when Raffi unexpectedly hails Picard to inform him that the synth have attacked Mars. Picard, having to leave earlier than anticipated because of the attack, meets with the nuns and assures them that he intends to make sure the mission to evacuate the Romulans moves forward as planned, and promises he will be back soon. Elnor just watches, hidden behind some curtains, as Picard beams away.
That can't have been easy for Elnor. to watch Picard going again.
Yeah.
I would imagine that in the circumstance of him being the only male there in a commune full of females, Picard's presence alone must have been such a comfort for him to have a father figure around, in the same way that there seems to be some comfort for Picard having Elnor around in exactly the same way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now, someone explain to me, why was Picard walking while being transported? What's the point? He's going to arrive
it's
on
the
ship where... yeah, I know. But I don't know why, but I mean...
Style?
Yeah, style. Because that was very stylish, yeah.
It was, but to have to stop and say, okay, energize, and then stand there and wait for it to happen must be quite awkward, I would imagine. But no, walking away and doing it, yeah, that was quite cool.
Especially if they can't transport you, you know, you're sitting there, I'm going away, hold on. I'll be out soon. But yeah, it was useless, but very stylish.
Yes.
It was good for effect.
Yeah, it was. Just reminded of that scene on the voyage home where Chekhov is inside the SS Enterprise. He's just collected the nuclear material to regenerate the dilithium crystals, and he's waiting to be beamed up, and he's like, Scotty, now would be a good time.
Yeah. So, Act 1.
Before you do...
Yes.
I want to highlight something that I thought was incredibly annoying.
Mm-hmm.
Opening credits, spoiler. Someone's name was mentioned in the credits.
Yes.
I think that was a stupid move. They should have done that at the end for reasons which will become very clear at the end.
I skipped the credits. So.
I did notice there was someone in the credits that appeared later. Is that what who you're talking about?
If you're talking about who I think you're talking about,
yes,
then yes.
I am talking about who you think I'm talking about.
They did have her in a trailer, though. So I knew at some point in time this person was going to show up.
Likewise, but for those people that didn't see the trailer and didn't know what was coming up and may have been familiar with a... past series that this person may have starred in. This is
I like
very
our
difficult.
Dancing.
Yes. Yeah. They might have been spoiled. I think it was unfortunate that they felt the need to put that credit in at the beginning of the show, where they could have just done something special at the end.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah.
Particularly for the amount of time this person was in the episode.
I actually it just made me excited.
Yeah.
But when I saw that name go by, I'm like, oh, yes!
Yes. Yeah, we'll get into that a bit later. Yeah.
Mark said that he didn't notice anything in the credits. And not being a Trekkie, enjoying watching us talk about it. So that's, that's a good point. We have one viewer and he's enjoying the show. So thank you, Mark.
That's a good sign.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess. We have one happy customer. So on to Act 1. La Sirena starts its warp drive as Cristobal Rios sits on the bridge reading The Tragic Sense of Life when Dr. Agnes Turati greets him. She attempts to engage him in conversation while he silently reads, or I guess tries to read. She mentions that she was able to catch up on 2 years of back issues of the Journal of Theoretical Cybernetics and that she watered Rios's plants. She also expresses confusion as to why Rios's hologram only includes Klingon opera, to which he says, it's a long story. Girati then remembers how she used to live with someone who loved reading paper books and how she would bother him when he read them. Rios asks what he did about it. And Girati only responds that since the person was her father, he had to just put up with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got to ask this question. It bugged me during the entirety of this scene. Is she generally this annoying?
No.
Or is it just nervousness on her part?
I thought she was annoying the whole episode. I mean, last week I liked her character, but this week I was like, I don't know.
I was curious as to whether she was actually testing Rios to see how he would respond to her rather unscientific attempts to get on his nerves.
I don't know. She started by saying that she figured that space was boring. That could be a reaction to that. I mean, she's used to be at the Daystrom Institute and have stuff to do and people to talk to, and she suddenly is on a spaceship with, how many people? Three humans and a bunch of holograms.
27 holograms.
that's a change of scenery, and for someone who's not used to it, it could be unnerving. So maybe she's just anxious and trying to, you know, she might be that kind of people who just speaks when they're very nervous.
Yep.
But it was a bit annoying. And if it's because she's bothered by space, then they did a great job, because
I wonder how she would get on with T'Pol.
Well, T'Pol being a Vulcan, she would probably be, you know, just stay stoic about it.
Yeah, and I think that's the problem. Everybody has their limits. She'd crack eventually.
I think she was lucky that it was Rios and not Raffi, because I'm not sure if Raffi would have as much patience as Rios had.
No.
Yeah, Mark said that she reminds him of Tilly, which is, there are some common points. Tilly speaks a lot when she's nervous.
Well, neither of them seem to have a filter. I think that's part of it. But there's a certain unconstrained enthusiasm.
A certain absolute candor.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Raffi angrily enters the bridge after noticing an abrupt change in the navigational log. Demanding to know where they're going, Rios tells her that Picard requested a stop at the Vachti on their way to Freecloud. Meanwhile, Picard is in a holographic recreation of his study back at Chateau Picard. This was recreated by the emergency hospitality hologram based on holoscans that Shaban provided, and it was meant to make Picard feel more at home. Picard notes that it's strange to have an EHH on the ship, to which the EHH responds that his services are very rarely needed. Raffi enters the holodeck, inquiring about Picard's decision to go to Vashti. Rios enters and expresses his disdain for the EHH as the hologram deactivates.
Yeah, disdain isn't the word I would have used.
No.
F-bomb number 3 in the series, I believe that was.
Yes, but this one didn't make sense. I mean, why? The other ones were kind of, you know, in context, but
it seemed like it was just almost an unnatural response. I mean, maybe he has some sort of a post-traumatic stress with holograms or something. Maybe it's got to be something rooted in his childhood of how he was traumatized by a hologram or something. I mean, I don't know.
I get the impression that this particular hologram Rios has a particular issue with.
Yeah, because the other ones, well, not that much, but I didn't really like the, what was the second one?
The second one was the
tactical
navigational one.
Navigational, yeah.
It just makes me think, though, why would they need a hologram for a ship that's likely automated? That to me, that just kind of made me scratch my head a little bit.
Exactly. That is exactly the question I was about to ask. The first word of each of these holograms is emergency. In what way is there an emergency for these three to have been invoked? They seem to be treated more as attendants, servants, if you like, to Rios rather than emergency things.
And in what occasion do you have an hospitality emergency?
When somebody shows up unexpected.
Yeah.
That's where.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
I want to, it almost seems like carryover from Voyager, how they expanded the doctor's role and had an emergency command role. Do you know about that? Or, mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
It almost seems like it's a little bit of a carryover from that maybe that when Voyager came back, they expanded upon that nonsense. Who knows?
I wonder if if the proliferation of hologram is actually some kind of joke that the writers made, as in, you know, we're going to have an emergency holographic doctor, and someone said, oh yeah, we can have an emergency tactical or hologram, and why not throw an emergency hospitality hologram, and you know, like a running gag as the hologram of the episode.
Well, now that you've made it sound like that, now I've totally changed my tune. If it's a joke, if it's like an inside joke, now I love it. In fact, now I'm just going to assume it's an inside joke.
Yeah. I mean, if there's another one in the next episode, then I would stand on my conclusions that it's a running gag.
Well, we do meet another one later on in this episode.
Yes. Yes.
But I've just had a quick scan ahead on Memory Alpha. And in terms of things that start with the word emergency and have holographic in them, it looks as though we've currently been aware of them all.
So, no,
so unless they invent some new ones.
So no emergency chef hologram? No emergency cleaning lady hologram?
It doesn't appear so at the moment, no.
Emergency boot shiner.
I could use an emergency cleaning lady hologram.
You could repurpose one. You could take the navigational. Yeah. I'm sure the navigational hologram can navigate a mop.
Bye. Everybody joins Picard for a cup of tea, and Ruffy states her opinion that going to Vashti is a bad idea. Picard says that he's as eager to get to Freeclad as Musica. Jurati then enters the holodeck, inquiring if she interrupted a secret meeting and if she's part of the crew. Rios points out that the query sector has become a power vacuum for smugglers and warlords like Kar Kantar, who practically controls the sector with a 33rd century bird of prey. Ruffy scolds Rios for not telling Picard this information sooner, but Rios simply replies that he figured Picard already knew. Ruffy also mentions that Vashti is home to many Romulans of the Romulan Rebirth movement, and doubts that Picard will be successful in getting the services of one of the Kuat Milat. Jurati expresses confusion by what she means, and Ruffy tells her that Picard is looking to hire an assassin. Picard clarifies that the nuns are not assassins, and that they can't be hired. He is going in the hopes that one will willfully choose to join him. Picard talks about how they helped him and Musica relocate more than 250,000 refugees during the evacuations. He also says that they are perhaps the most skilled warriors he's ever seen, and that even the Tal Shiar feared them. Rios is skeptical of Picard's ambition to gain their service. Picard notes that they have their own criteria on whether to give or hold their services for a cause. The Admiral is also confident that the nuns will find his cause worthy. He resumes the holographic recreation, and Ruffy approaches him, trying to reason with him. She understands that Dash's death is making Picard think of Elnor, and asks that they focus on one thing at a time, and for them to get to Freecloud before going to Vashti. However, Picard tells her that they will still go, since he may not ever get the chance to come this way again. He then exits the holodeck and heads for his quarters. And then we have my quote of the week, when Ruffy says, do you remember what we used to say back then? And Picard responds, one impossible thing at a time.
I like that.
Yeah, that scene was just full of absolute gem quotes. It was very difficult to try and pick a good one out of that, because they were all absolutely fantastic. One standout for me is when Ruffy said, you know what, fine, let's go to Vashti. Check out that big statue of you. I mean, they must have put up at least one. And then Rios said, well, if they did, someone's probably stolen it by now.
Yeah, yeah. Or when Ruffy says going is to visit Vashti is not only, was it stupid? Or it's also bizarre. And then a few minutes later, Jurati comes in and says, it's bizarre. And Ruffy's expression, like, duh, just said it.
Oh, crazy. I did realize that although the holodeck was paused, the simulation was paused, they could still sit on chairs and stuff. But I suppose with the idea of holodecks, assuming this is a holodeck, I don't know whether it works in the same way, but if it is just one giant replicator, then I suppose if a chair was generated as part of this, then it would still exist even with the with the simulation being paused. Which then begs the question that if you then terminate the simulation, where do all the replicated items go?
Back into the giant replicator cloud, I guess.
Yeah, probably.
I thought they got jettisoned out into space.
Probably at the same place that you know, the plates and glasses and forks and stuff like that they use when they have lunch.
I think recycled.
Yeah, pretty much.
Probably recycled into whatever.
Which would make sense why in an episode of TNG how they couldn't just shut the hologram down without causing a harm to the people in there. Remember that? I forget. It was one of the hologram goes crazy episodes. So that would explain some of that.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Could be.
But anyway, my quote of the week actually came right towards the end of that scene when Jurati said, "Anyone else think the way of absolute candor sounds potentially annoying?" And I thought, how ironic for you to say that.
Yeah. And once again, it could very well be on purpose. Because they're very, 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 very good, those writers in this series.
Yes. I don't know if it's worth just very quickly sort of giving a bit of a background as to what this absolute candor actually is. But I think you've already hinted to it, Yannick, that the way about absolute candor is communication without filter between thought and word.
Yeah.
Which means that the people that are observers of absolute candor tend to be very direct in their communication.
Yeah.
But apparently this absolute candor was at complete odds to normal Romulan society.
Apparently, yes.
So it's kind of the equivalent of the Kirshara for the Vulcans, which went pretty much against everything that Vulcan society stood for.
Mm-hmm.
I found that really, really interesting. I'm kind of glad I took the time to look into that.
Yes.
I was going to say, I kind of like the fact that cloud services are still being employed in the 24th century or whenever it is. You know, I got free cloud. I wonder if there are any competitors. I wonder if Nextcloud is still around, you know? I'm sure OwnCloud is gone.
Yeah. Yeah. After that, they're going to go to Nextcloud. Yeah, you already mentioned that. Yeah.
The free cloud hub is coming out. It's very soon.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that. It's great.
Geek joke. On the artifact, Soji is watching a holographic projection of an old Romulan talk show while she arranges Pikmit card. Is that Pikmit?
Pikmit. Something like that.
Pikmit card. In the projection, Ramda is talking about Ganmadan, which the Romulans say is the day of annihilation. She says how the day is the end of all life everywhere, when shackled demons will answer the call of Seb Sheneb, the destroyer. As she says this, Soji looks disturbed, remembering what Ramda had called her a short time ago.
And this is kind of where I said last week that it's almost like a prophecy. There seems to be this repeating prophecy that the Romulans hold seemingly quite dear and quite important to their culture.
Yeah. I thought maybe Soji was she was almost maybe activating, you know, listening to that. It seemed to be that maybe she was going to go once again in this state of a torpor. You know, like when she fell asleep when she talked to her supposed mom.
Okay.
I don't know.
I didn't pick that.
The review said, and it's probably true, that she was just remembering what Ramda called her. But I didn't think about that at the time, and I was thinking that maybe she was going to activate.
I don't remember that. It might be worth me watching that again.
It's always worth watching it again.
Mm.
Often I listen to this show, and then I remember stuff and I go back and watch the part that we discuss to see if we were right or if we made the fool of ourselves. And oftentimes we did make fool of ourselves.
Probably. This is incredibly likely.
Yeah. La Sirena reaches Vashti, where they are met with a planetary defense system that the Fenris Rangers had helped to install. Ruffy calls the system primitive, but effective. She notes that every 30 minutes, the shield opens up for interstellar traffic with clearance, and that ships without clearance are immediately fired upon. She has also been unable to get the clearance to pass, and tells Picard that the Romulans were not impressed to learn that he was on board. And that was funny because it was, once again, as in almost every episode since the beginning, he seems to think that, you know, everybody would know him and would be pleased to see him. And, well, no, it's not working.
Yeah.
Picard beams down to Vashti's Romulan relocation hub. He is shocked to see that in the last 14 years, the hub has not fared well. While still heavily populated by Romulan refugees, the settlement suffers from poverty, degradation, and ethnic strife. Unlike the last time he was there, Romulans ignore his presence and his overtures as he attempts to greet them. A few eye him in contempt from afar. One even signals another Romulan through a communicator when he sees Picard. The Admiral makes his way to the house of the Quat Milat, where he sees Zani. He greets her, and though surprised to see him, she and the other sisters return his greeting. Picard tells her that though he knows he has no right to ask, he needs her help one last time. A loud crash is heard, and a grown-up Elnor dashes through the curtains, apologizing before he realizes Picard is standing before him.
I think that caught Picard out as much as it did Elnor.
Yeah, yeah. That's true. He was he's been away for 14 years and he's coming back without any warning. So I guess I would be surprised too if I was meeting someone that I haven't seen for 14 years.
Yeah,
and with no gifts.
And with no gifts.
Oh, that very good. Yes.
Yeah,
I hadn't realized that.
I mean, if you live for 14 years, you better bring a huge gift.
At least a box of candy.
Or at least a box of chocolates. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. A huge one.
14 years worth, to be precise.
Yeah.
A lot.
I don't know how often he used to visit Elnor, but yeah. Probably a big, big box of candy. So, Act 2. Soji is monitoring Ramda as she lays on a biobed, unconscious. Narek enters and notes how Ramda has always been tormented, saying that he isn't surprised she attempted suicide. Soji doesn't understand why she feels drawn to her, but blames herself for Ramda's outburst. Soji and Narek go to the mess hall to share a bottle of Romulan ale, and Soji admits that Narek's mysterious nature challenges her paradigm. She asks Narek how he knew she would go to the disordered ward, to which Narek denies that he knew. She asks if Narek has been watching her, which he also denies. Soji notes his lack of uniform, insignia, and rank, that he knows an unusual amount of information, and can go wherever he pleases on the artifact, leading her to the conclusion that he is working with the Tal Shiar. Narek denies this as well, though admits that if he was Tal Shiar, he would still deny it. Soji asks him about the Shenor, but he claims not to know anything, saying that he's sure the Borg databases have those records. Soji says those records are classified and asks if he has access to them, which Narek says he doesn't, but might know someone who does.
Of course he does.
Yeah. Right.
Now, I think it was when Soji asked Narek if he'd been watching her, I noticed that the display unit behind him that was showing some kind of information, it bleeped exactly after she asked that question. And I don't want to put that down to a coincidence. I think it was relevant because it didn't beep at any other time. And I wonder whether that was some kind of not particularly well-guarded signal to Narek to watch what it is he's saying.
It was essentially an Amazon Alexa of that time period that was just listening, you know. And so it's actually searching to see what, you know, what things to buy is really what it comes down to, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have a feeling that nobody is actually telling Narek what he can or cannot do or should or shouldn't do. I mean, even his sister is having a hard time controlling him. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
Oh, it's just come to me. I've just worked it out. I know what happened to the Borg.
Yeah.
Amazon took them out. Amazon bought them.
Amazon bought the Borg. Yeah, okay.
Well, they put their technology on the subscribe and save, and people are just buying it left and right, and so they're just tearing apart those cubes.
Oh, boy.
For a 2% discount per month.
That's right.
Oh, dear.
Quick announcement, I'm looking for another co-host, so if someone wishes to send your resume to feedback@yourgrowhot.org. Narek takes Soji to one of the cube's ventilation shafts. While they walk there, they talk about Ramda and how Soji learned to speak fluent Romulan. Narek concludes that she had to have learned it sometimes before May 12th, 2396. When Soji left for the Beta Quadrant aboard the Edison. Soji confirms that Narek has indeed been watching her. They reach the ventilation shaft and Narek has Soji remove her shoes. Afterwards, he runs down the shaft and glides along the floor with a gleeful cheer. And she does the same. The two enjoy themselves as they glide through the shafts and engage in a kiss before Narek tells Soji that the Edison's passenger list shows no record of her ever having been aboard. Soji once more says that she was, and when she realizes that Narek is accusing her of lying about it, she angrily tells him to go to hell. She begins to leave, before he once more asks if she's interested in accessing the classified Borg data file on the Shenor. She asks what he's doing, and he simply responds that he's doing the same thing as she is, feeding an insatiable curiosity.
This is not a healthy relationship.
No.
There is so much wrong with it.
Yeah.
It really is.
However, I believe Narek when he says that the ship doesn't have any record of her being on board, because if it's the same as with Dash, her whole identity has been created about 3 years ago.
Exactly.
So she thinks she was on the ship, but she probably wasn't. So,
and she will probably have all sorts of memories that relate to her time on that ship.
Now that begs the question, how does Narek knows what kind of memory she has?
That is a good question. How would he know? Unless somehow he's involved.
How would he know?
And the other thing too is, you know, they talk about these the memories and such, and they have like all these memories. Someone had to sit down and write those memories. That is a lot of work.
Yeah,
I mean,
creating a fake identity, a whole life, basically.
It's a pretty big undertaking.
And how did Narek know? I just can't figure it out. So hopefully we're gonna have an answer that in the upcoming episodes, but so far it's getting weirder and weirder what Narek knows, and how he knows that is, I have absolutely no clue.
No. And I think this is probably the one thing that's I'm asking the most questions about at the moment, is where Soji is, how Soji was fed, for want of a better phrase. Because whoever has given her her memories and the identity, the legend that she's working from, is obviously very sophisticated, very intelligent, but didn't think it clever enough to maybe adjust the passenger manifest of the Ellison, for example, to fit the legend. Because if you're creating a fictional profile of an individual, it's not going to take long before somebody comes along and notices the discrepancies between that profile and the real world, like this.
I don't know if I guess the Tal Shiar or Narek and for whoever is working for are some kind of secret service or things like that. So they have they have means to find that, and they have reasons to look for that. But the average person wouldn't, you know, if you're telling me that you were on a ship last year to go on vacation, I will not go and check that. No. So if whoever sent Soji to the cube didn't expect, you know, someone to scrutinize her past, I mean, it's one thing to be able to create those memories, this identity for an android. I mean, if you're an expert of the field, then you can probably do that. But for that same person to be able to change the manifest of a ship that is the 20 something years old,
yeah,
it's probably not feasible. So, you know, I don't find that very particularly strange that the manifest was not changed.
I think I more find it unreasonable that whoever set this up didn't think of that. Not that they may not have been able to change it, but they must have realized that at some point someone's going to come along and work that out.
Yeah. I'm not entirely convinced.
It kind of takes back to the theory of the Vashtak. Was it Vashtak? Tashvak? Can't remember now. Takvash.
Yeah. Something like that, yeah.
Something like that. Creating the Borg. I'm going to keep bringing that back because the more I think about it, the more I think it is potentially viable.
No, it's not. Because the Borg precedes everything. So, yeah.
No, I disagree. I totally disagree with that.
The Borg precedes guidance people. So, and they're like thousands of years old.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
We only know that the Borg goes back to the 15th century, but the Romulans were around, you know, hundreds of years before that.
So yeah, I don't think the Vulcan created the Borgs, but you know, everything is possible. So we'll see.
I'd have said the Vulcans.
Not the Vulcan, the Romulans.
Same thing. Yeah, right? Same difference. They're related.
We will see.
Yeah, pointy ears.
Whatever.
On La Sirena, Ruffy picks up a transmission and realizes that someone has identified Picard and has sent out an alert to the other Romulans. When they recommend to Picard that they beam him out, he declines and says he needs more time to converse with the Quat'Milat. Ruffy warns him that there is a lot of anger in the Romulans for what happened in the past, but he emphasizes that he is safe with the Quat'Milat. Rios then detects an incoming ship, which turns out to be Kar-Katar's Bird of Prey. Picard tells them to do what they need to do, but he needs more time before terminating communications. So it's, once again, the captain is back, as in, I need more time, I'm doing what I want, do what you have to do, I'll call you back. Basically.
Yeah.
That was nice. I liked it. It's a nice little spark.
Yeah, as the same thing as was it last week when he called Rafi and he said, oh, I know you're working on this thing, and she denies, but he said, okay, yes, okay, here's what you need, and continue working, I'll call you back. On Vashti, Picard and Zanny continue to talk. Zanny tells Picard how most of the Quat'Milat sisters serve as free blades. Picard asks if they still bind themselves to a cause, and Zanny says they do if the cause is judged worthy. Elnor brings a meal to Picard, which Picard politely declines, but this upsets Elnor, who exits the house. Zanny asks Picard what his cause is in regards to his inquiry of the Quat'Milat, and when Picard mentioned that he will be taking on the Tal Shiar, Zanny recommends that he talk to Elnor. Though Elnor can never truly be of the Quat'Milat since he's a man, Zanny tells Picard that the boy's skills in battle are formidable, and that though the journey may be dangerous and may even kill Elnor in the end, she will be happy knowing that he will have ended up living rather than dying on Vashti.
Yeah.
Yeah. It really must be very difficult for him, you know, following the training and everything, and not being able to actually be a Quat'Milat.
So while I was watching this with my oldest, who's getting into Star Trek, he's almost nine, I kind of... The profanity kind of bothers me a little bit because of his youth. But anyway, and actually I paused the episode at this point, and I had a great discussion about what living really means with my oldest boy. And it made for some great dialogue for me to have with my son on the importance of doing what you're supposed to do, and how that actually is, you know, the value of really living, not just being alive. And I think those are two different, things. And he actually understood it. And I said, you have to do, your purpose, what your destiny is in life. Don't just, sit around and play video games all day. No offense to people who play video games all day.
That's quite an advanced topic for a nine-year-old.
Oh, it is. I could go on about his other different things we've talked about. He even questioned me on time travel. We don't have to talk about that here. if I would go back in time and change things in my life. And he got me in a Kobayashi Maru, as it were. So, yeah, he's a lot smarter than I give him credit for.
They all are.
Fair play.
Yeah,
they all are. So, Act 3. Picard approaches Elnor to formally ask him to judge his cause. He recalls how Data sacrificed his life to save his own, and goes on telling Dej's and her sister's story. Mentioning that the Tal Shiar are hunting Soji, Elnor surmises that she is an android, then recalls stories that Picard had told him about Data and his pet, Spot. Elnor then asks Picard why he needs him, and Picard mentions his failure to protect Daj. Elnor mentions that Picard needs someone, but once more asks why Picard needs him specifically. Picard mentions that he is young and strong, and that Zanny had recommended Elnor to him. Picard believes his cause to be appropriate for the criteria of the Quat'Milat. But Elnor gets upset once more, and recalls how Picard had left him on his own all those years ago. Ignoring Picard's plea, Elnor leaves, saying he has no reason not to leave Picard on his own. And I thought that was very profound, as he has now... It's kind of a revenge. He has now a way to impose on Picard what Picard imposed on him, even though it may have been involuntary from Picard's for Picard to leave and not be able to come back. And it was rude from Elnor, but I totally understand.
I can't remember how old Elnor was 14 years ago, but he was still a child. Yeah. And if you're smited as a child and you have no opportunity to correct that circumstance, then you're going to carry that childhood resentment for pretty much forever, until such a point where you can get that done. So what he's done here is effectively done what he should have done 14 years ago today.
Yeah.
And I've got to say, Picard absolutely deserved that.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
Now, despite the fact that circumstance meant that there was no way that Picard could have come back, we believe.
Yeah.
Then, although it was unfortunate, then, like I say, I think it was still deserved. I think he definitely had that coming.
Yeah. Mark said that Picard missed an opportunity to reconnect with Elnor by just saying he needed a young man instead of saying, I need you for, you know, because I like you, because I want you, because I missed you. And instead said, I need a young man next to me.
Yeah.
I think, you know, what is the absolute candor, right? I think it was good, though, to just, you know, air your grievances immediately and just throw them out there. If you can't, you know, and I think that's a good lesson, I think, for people in general. Just air your grievances. If you have a problem with somebody, you know, if you had a disagreement and, or missed expectations, it's better to just say it, you know, in a kind way, but just say it so it's out there, and then you can negotiate whatever from that point. And so I thought that was a great place of negotiation immediately. You hurt me, and explain yourself. And I thought that was great. And it was good writing. Everything that was done, I think it was done well. It wasn't cringy. It didn't upset me, you know. And Picard, he attacked the conversation appropriately. And I thought that was a really great, you know, it shows the character. It shows the strength of the character, even as a 79-year-old man or however old he's supposed to be.
Mm. Yeah. Picard tells Rios that he's ready to leave, and Rios let him know that the next window for transport will be in 7 minutes. Picard returns to the center of the settlement and, noticing a restaurant that serves only Romulans, decides to defy the warning and enters. Many Romulans take offense to this, but none confront him as he greets them and sits down, attempting to get service.
Picard didn't defy the warning. He literally trampled over it.
Yeah, he stepped on it.
That wasn't just him ignoring it and going in there anyway. He took the sign off the fence that surrounded the restaurant out seating area,
yeah,
chucked it on the floor, and then walked across it. That was defiance.
Yeah.
It was more than defiance. It was almost a direct attack on what was essentially apartheid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was an ethnic separation.
I wonder if Picard did that on purpose, you know, just to provoke them.
I hope so.
Yeah, yeah, same here. I exactly think the same way. I loved it. I thought that was just a beautiful... He had absolute candor with that as well.
Because, you know,
they basically
they were ignoring him, and I'm pretty sure he did that because he thought if he had entered the restaurant without doing that, probably they would just have ignored him and do nothing. But he wanted to engage the conversation. Probably not in the way that it ended up, so he had to be provocative, just to have them go from ignorance to confrontation.
Yeah, Mark in the live chat, he used the word belligerence to describe Picard's treatment of the warning.
Absolutely,
the most positive form of belligerence ever. I think. Maybe not ever, but a seriously positive form of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. I love it.
Picard is then approached by an ex-Romulan senator named Tenkem Adrev, who mentions how he was present when Picard addressed the Hall of State as the embodiment of Starfleet. He remembers the many promises that the great Saint Picard made, and Adrev found very touching. He remembers Picard bringing Walberg-class transport ships and how many of the now residents of Vashti boarded the Nightingale. Picard laments that the short amount of time made the evacuation difficult, but Andreev simply retorts that little was expected of Starfleet and shows visible anger for the Admiral. Andreev calls a few friends over, but before Picard can attempt to reason with them, Andreev accuses him of trying to deliberately confuse and divide the Romulan people. Picard angrily rebukes the claim. It was starting to not look very good for Picard at this point, because one person to talk to, he could manage, but three angry Romulan, not so much.
If he only had a sword, he could show him his mad fencing skills.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, if only.
If only.
Yeah. But yeah. Why would you bring two heavies in unless you yourself felt threatened by the presence of Picard in that restaurant? If you were so sure of yourself, if you were so convinced of your own superiority, which this Tanguy Mandrev clearly was, then all you're doing by asking two other people to come up and basically assist him is proving that he's a coward.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But he was a Borg, and he personally defeated the Borg Queen himself, sort of, with Data's help, you know, in first contact. So I don't see, you know,
yeah.
I mean,
okay,
the guy has a reputation of he's been captured and tortured and survived that. I mean, the guy is almost indestructible at this point, you know, and you know, got to make sure you got a backup. You never want a fair fight. If you get into a fight, you don't want to have a fair fight.
if that was the case, then I would dispute this next scene.
Yeah. So let's move on to this next scene.
Yeah.
Having heard enough, Andrev tells one of his friends to give Picard his sword, meaning to engage him in combat. But Picard refuses. Andrev doesn't take the refusal for an answer, forcibly gives him a sword, and has him moved into the streets, where he attacks Picard. Assuming a traditional fencing stance, Picard successfully parries the attack, but throws the blade aside, refusing to fight. At that moment, Elnor appears and asks Andrev to choose to leave. Andrev ignores Elnor and moves to attack Picard once more. With remarkable speed, Elnor successfully subdues Andrev's friend and decapitates Andrev, lamenting, "I regret your choice." Elnor then addresses the crowd that has since gathered to watch the confrontation and binds himself to Picard as his Galankai, warning the crowd that anyone who threatens Picard will be choosing to die by his blade. Picard urges Elnor to put his blade away before he himself addresses the crowd, acknowledging that both he and the Federation have failed the Romulans. He apologizes that he broke faith with them. Rios hails Picard and tells him he's ready to transport them to the ship. At that moment, One of Andrev's friends pulls out a disruptor, but both Elnor and Picard are beamed to La Sirena before he has a chance to fire. Now, why? Why did they make this weird matrixy whirlwind thing that Elnor does when he moves? Why? Why? It's like the jump on the first episode. It's totally useless.
But I thought it was cool.
It was cool, though. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
He's a bad man or something. I don't want to say the word, but he's a bad, you know, to the bone. He's awesome.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
I know what you mean.
He can kick some serious fanny.
That means something different in this country. No, you're absolutely right.
It does?
He can. Yeah. I'll explain to you off.
Oh man, did I make a heel of myself again? I'm out.
It's all good. But this scene was Picard to the core. He was given the opportunity to fight. He refused. He was handed a sword. He discarded it. So at every moment, at every opportunity, he tried to go down the diplomatic route. And that, to me, is Picard.
Yeah. I agree.
Absolutely.
I agree. Picard was great. not so much with the martial art thingy, but you seem to all like it. So, yeah,
I thought that whole like 5 second part where Elnor appears on the scene, does his martial arts matrixy bullet time thing, and then chops off Andrav's head, which I thought they did incredibly tastefully.
Yeah,
I was like, wow, that was pretty awesome.
Yeah, me too. Except for this thing, but yeah, the whole thing was
yeah.
Was
there was no lens flare in this scene, though.
No,
Yannick.
No lens.
It's true. No lens. That was great.
Well
I
done.
Appreciated writers. That. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I regret your choice nearly became my quote of the week because I think that was spot on.
Yeah. Safely on the ship, Picard angrily scolds Elnor for killing Andrev. He says that he will benefit from Elnor's skill and courage, but will tell him when to fight and when to refrain. And as Elnor swears to this, Picard then introduces Elnor to Jurati and Raffi, who is visibly unimpressed. As they head to the bridge, Picard asks what made Elnor change his mind and bind him to Picard's cause. Elnor simply replies that the cause met the requirements for worthiness and that Picard needed him after all. Jurati asks what the requirements were, and Picard responds that the Galang Kai will only bind herself, or himself in Elnor's case, to a cause that is deemed lost.
I love that so that much.
Was, yeah, very encouraging for the rest of the crew.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, is that true? Is that absolutely true? Or was that just Picard being a little bit silly?
I think it's true.
Because that was just absolutely brilliant. No, yeah, it is the case. The criterion for worthiness, that it be a lost cause.
Well, that's what Memory Alpha says, because that's what he said in the episode. For what I know, we've never met the nuns, the warrior nuns.
No. But I wonder, Picard had been asked that question a few times about the requirements for worthiness. But it's only at this point that he actually tells us what those requirements are.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering whether he did that just to wind up.
Jurati?
No, I'm going to say Raffi.
But she was not there. It was only Jurati with him on this scene.
Ah, okay.
Good question, Mark. Mark says, how is there anyone left in the order to train new recruits if all they're into... if all they are doing is, go help lost causes. So probably there's a...
What doesn't mean they
a lot
die.
Of turnover.
Because they're that good.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, they're that good. That's, yeah, here.
So, Act 4. On the artifact, Narissa Rizzo enters Narek's quarter and startles him from sleep. She taunts him, asking if he was expecting his robot friend. Narek simply emphasizes that he's interested in her obsession with Ramda, what truly happened after the artifact assimilated the Shainor, and why the crew and passenger lost their minds after assimilation. Rizzo simply expresses frustration at Narek's slow approach to Soji. Narek is cautious as he fears that if he presses her too hard, she will activate. He tries to explain that he wants to kill them all, but that they can't kill them until they find where they're coming from. Rizzo simply rebukes that in his approach, he just slides further into his own goals and wonders if Soji is the one handling him. She has him remind her that Soji is Seb Sheneb, before telling him that if there are no further results 1 week from now, she will take matters into her own hands. She then leaves him in his quarters, visibly torn in what to do, and banging his head against the bulkhead.
Did anybody else find this scene really uncomfortable to watch?
Yeah.
Because Narissa and Narek are supposed to be brother and sister.
Yes, exactly.
And yet the way that Narissa was acting was not sisterly.
Nope.
Well, it could be that they're from certain states... In the United States, you know, there's certain states that are known for such things here. You know, I don't want to say because I don't want to sound like I'm a regionalist, but
No, okay, I'm with you.
So could be one of those, you know, maybe like they're from one of those kind of states in Romulus, you know, one of those creepy states.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe. It might just be a Romulan cultural thing that we're not aware of.
Maybe. But I thought it was an unusual Narek we saw in this scene. I mean, he's usually very sure of himself. He knows what he wants. He's, you know, he lets no one tell him what he can do, how he should manage his mission. And here it was really, it seemed that he was afraid of his sister. And for the first time, he was not in control. He was not, you know, the guy in the room with who decides what's going on. And it was, I wonder if maybe he might develop some kind of anger against her sister, his sister.
I don't know
if she is actually his sister.
Well, there is that.
Maybe they're step siblings.
Yeah,
potentially.
That would explain the creepiness too.
Maybe because she only called him little brother once.
Yes.
So,
but the way she approached him, her look, her demeanor, her attitude was vastly different from how we'd seen her before. I mean, this is the first time I think I've seen her without a. Starfleet uniform on.
Didn't she have a Romulan uniform on the previous episode when she met with Narek in some shady part of the artifact? I don't remember.
I don't remember which episode.
Oh, no, I think you're right. It was after... it was outside his... outside... her quarters,
probably
outside Soji's
like
quarters, that she accosted him. No, you're right.
You know, in the first episode, we saw her as a human in Starfleet headquarters. Second episode, she was an hologram talking to Narek. Third episode, she was there on the artifact, and she talked to Narek in this outside Soji's quarters. And this episode, she was there. It seems that the more we go on, the more Romulan she becomes.
Yeah.
She's detoxing from all the humanness.
Yeah.
this is like withdrawal, is it?
Pretty much, yeah. That's why she's so vile.
Mark said that Narek was like that when he dealt with her in the previous episode. I'm not sure. I think he was pretty sure of himself in all three first episodes.
But she was a lot more in his face at that point.
Yes. Yes.
So, yeah, maybe she is becoming a lot more... I don't want to use the word domineering based on what we've just been speaking about. But, yes.
But it would fit.
It would fit, yes.
Yeah. Back in orbit of Vashti, Carcanta's Bird of Prey arrives on the scene and opens fire on La Sirena. Rios begins to execute evasive maneuvers, noting that the Bird of Prey has a primitive targeting system, but he still is worried about the planet's security net. Jurati asks if they can escape the Bird of Prey, and Rios responds that, while they are more nimble, the Bird of Prey is likely faster than La Sirena. As the ship takes another hit, he activates Emmet, an emergency tactical hologram. Yay, once again, another one. Was he Spanish or something?
I think it was Spanish. Yes.
Yeah. So that's
Spanish or Italian.
So the doctor was American or had an American accent. The tactical was the Irish one.
No, this was the tactical one.
This was
navigational. So,
the navigation one was the Irish one.
Was Irish,
which. The third one, what was the third one? Ah, there's too many holograms. there a Russian one?
Just having a look.
I think there was a Russian one. Anyway, it was a Spanish hologram. And
Well, kudos to the actor who can speak all those languages, or, well, hopefully can. Maybe it's just, you know, make-believe. I don't know. I don't speak Spanish. Emmett handles the ship's phasers while Rios continues to maneuver. The Bird of Prey begins to herd La Sirena towards the planet's security net, and Rios executes a series of maneuvers, but gets too close to the net. At that moment, an unidentified ship suddenly enters the fray and fires on the Bird of Prey. Their combined feather fire cripples Carcanta's vessel, but immediately afterwards, the unidentified ship takes a critical hit from the Bird of Prey. It was fun how they cut the Bird of Prey's wing, almost like they were welding.
Off.
Yeah,
that's so pretty cool.
Just yeah, that was cool. But if it was a plane, it would have, you know, crashed the plane immediately. But as it's a spaceship, well, it maybe had a little more difficulty to maneuver, but it didn't actually.
It slowed down immediately.
Yeah. Well,
because obviously it was one of the nacelles that had been ripped off. Yeah.
At this point, I was still wondering who was in this ship and what it was doing here. But the reveal comes pretty soon.
Despite me whinging about the fact that I'd been spoiled about who's going to be appearing on this episode, it just completely escaped. I'd completely forgotten about it by that point.
Yeah.
So, no, I didn't know either.
Ruffy tells Picard that the ship is hailing them, and the Admiral habitually orders for a channel to be opened. Looking at Rios, he agrees, and Ruffy replies that the pilot is asking for permission to be beamed to La Sirena. As if you were, hey, please, can you beam me? I'm going to die if you don't, so please. As if he was asking for permission.
I love the way that Picard says, yeah, bring him aboard. No, your ship.
Yeah. Emmett believes beaming over an unidentified pilot would present too big a risk, but Ruffy pushes, stating that the pilot's ship is breaking up. They immediately beam the pilot over, with Elnor readying himself for a potential threat, before the pilot's ship crashes into Vashti's planetary shield. The pilot appears on the bridge, and is revealed to be none other than Seven of Nine, whom Picard immediately identifies. Yeah, and me too, and I was like, yeah!
I was.
In front of my TV. Yeah.
My kids just looked at me when I started cheering, and they're like, what's the matter with you, White? I'm like, well, it's a Star Trek thing.
Exhausted and sporting an injury on her forehead, Seven tells Picard that he owes her a ship, and then collapses on the deck. But she had time to make the head tilt that Seven does.
She got it from Data.
Yeah. Very, 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 very good end of this episode.
Brilliant. Absolutely fantastic episode. I thought it was very well put together.
Yeah. And as I tweeted just after that, Seven is back and everything is going to be okay now.
I couldn't help but think, like, you know, watching that the ship fight, the dog fight, where did some Romulans dig up a 100-year-old Romulan bird of prey? Like, I mean, is there some junkyard with those things just kind of, you know, mothballed someplace? It kind of makes me wonder. And it's interesting that a 100-year-old ship would be faster than the, whatever, what the L something. Sirena. Yeah, that ship.
Isn't the Bird of Prey a Klingon ship?
Well, there's the Romulan Bird of Prey.
Is a warbird?
No, yeah, this was a Romulan Bird of Prey.
Oh, okay. They have Bird of Prey too? Okay.
They had a Bird of Prey first, because the Klingons just had the battle cruiser. You know, with the big lung.
Nipped them from the...
Yeah. They copied everything else.
Yeah. Also, I wonder why, you know, it was Rios was worried about the safety net of the planet, but why couldn't he just fly on the towards the other direction? You know, even if the... Yeah, even if the...
Where's the drama in that?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, let's, you know, we have space, a whole lot of nothing. Let's just fight right next to the dangerous part of the planet. Sure, why not?
Maybe he could have used that to his advantage, was what he was thinking. You know, if he can get the Romulan ship to be targeted as opposed to his ship.
Maybe.
Yeah. So yeah, I was very pleased to see Seven on the bridge of La Sirena. And contrary to you, Dev, I didn't watch the credits, so I knew Seven was coming back to the series. I just didn't know it was on this episode, and I was really excited to see her.
Quick question. Did Picard only ever know Seven post-Borg?
I don't recall Seven and Picard being in the same episode of anything before.
Right. I'm just curious as to why, bearing in mind that she is human, I'm curious as to why he referred to her as Seven of Nine when that isn't
because that's her
actually
name.
Her name.
Well, that's what she went by.
Or not.
Isn't what but she went by,
she
though?
She didn't get any other name after she was de-borgized.
De-borgified? Okay.
De-borgified. Yeah, that's better. De-borgified. Yeah, so I think she never had another name.
She did have a name. Her name was Annika.
Before she was assimilated.
Yeah, before she was assimilated. But then she was desimilated. and yet she kept her Borg name.
Yeah. And no, Mark, she was not in the Borg movie. Borg, the movie. That would make a good movie. No, she was not in the Star Trek
Insurrection.
She was not in that movie. Yeah. That was before Seven of Nine.
Yeah. No, but he might know her because he was a Borg once.
They were all connected.
He was a Borg. Mm. And they are all connected.
Well, of course they were, yeah.
And everybody knows Seven anyway, so I mean the first Borg being about I'm talking in-world. The first the first Borg to be in a crew on a Federation spaceship. So
what about Picard? He was a Borg. Yes,
Yeah, he was a Borg too.
So she's the second.
Yeah. So technically, oh no, I was gonna say Hugh was the first, but Hugh never was a member of the crew. But Picard, was he a member of the crew while being a Borg? Yeah, when he was Locutus, he was on board the Enterprise? Or was he de-Borgified before he came back to the Enterprise? I don't remember.
He was de-Borgified on the Enterprise. Because remember, they captured him?
Technically, was not a member of the crew while being a Borg. So Seven was the first Borg being a member of the crew.
Okay, fine.
Right. So that was the end of our review of Star Trek Picard Season 1, Episode 4, Absolute Candor. What did you guys think of this episode? And Nate, what do you think about the whole series so far?
So I would say I like the series. I enjoy it. It is a little bit less. There's a little bit less optimism than what I like from the Next Generation. But you know, that aside, you know, every society goes through ups and downs. So it's a down, you could say, you know. But there's hope. There's hope, you know, interwoven into the in the fabric of the story. I do think it seems like some of the characters are a little overdramatic, you know, at times. You know, they kind of kicked it off with Picard being a little bit, you know, kind of victimized a little bit in the beginning, I felt like. And I almost didn't like that, but they didn't, like, just play on that too much. But, you know, like what's her name? Data's daughter that's still living on the Borg cube, Dodge.
Soji.
Dodge was the other one. Her and the Romulan dude, kind of a little overly hormonal for Star Trek, I would say. You know, that's maybe they could have dialed that back a little bit, but it just felt like people are just a little overdramatic. You know, outside of that, I like it overall. I would say, I look forward to every episode. So if I at least look forward to the show, that means it's a win. If I don't like every aspect of it, I didn't like every aspect of every TNG episode either. There's some I skip over, so
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I can't I can't fault them for that. So, but I would say that it's getting better as it's progressing. It's getting better. It's getting more interesting. The story is more vibrant. They're showing the depth of the characters, and they're not all just sarcastic millennials, you know? So it's good. You know, there's some good depth and quality to it. I love seeing Patrick Stewart reprise his role, sort of, you know, not Captain Picard, but as, you know, retired Admiral Picard. I do enjoy it. And I like the fact that there's like this little bit of like subversion. I'm going to use there's some deep state action going on within the Federation or Starfleet anyway. Mm. And it's neat to see their interpretation of maybe some of the problems we're having in current society, I guess you could say. And that's what Star Trek always has been, is basically discussing those issues. And, you know, I don't necessarily have to agree with maybe their view on everything, but I like what is being produced. It's well written. It doesn't feel like they're phoning it in. It feels like they're really thinking about it, and I really appreciate that. So I'm excited for tomorrow. I got to tell you, I kind of wish I were eight hours in advance, you know, so I could watch it 8 hours sooner. I mean, I'm really looking forward to it.
Spare a thought. We have to wait another 24 hours after you do.
Yeah. We have to wait until
Oh, you have to
Friday.
Wait until after me?
Mm. Yeah, 24 hours after you.
Oh, well, I almost feel bad.
Well, it comes out at midnight. Midnight.
0-100 hours.
Friday. Oh, dark 30. Friday morning.
Okay.
I watch it at 5 minutes past midnight every Friday morning because I just not possible that because on Friday night I have my daughter, so I would have to wait for at least 9 p.m. and then just watch it between 9 and 10:30 because at 10:30 there's a certain music podcast that starts live every Friday night at 9:30 p.m. UK time, thepodcast.org/live.
Of course.
it's just impossible for me to wait that long. You know, the risk of being spoiled by an accidental tweet or something like that, and it's really too big.
Oh, I have Thursday. Just so you know, on Thursday I have a social media blackout until after I watch it. Like, I don't look at anything online until after I watch it, just because I don't want to mess it up. You know, and maybe I shouldn't say that this word, but Star Wars, even those, I will not watch any. Please don't kick me off. Don't ban hammer me. But I won't anything that I'm like looking forward to. I will social media blackout all of that. Like, I won't look anything up because I don't want to know. I want to go in there, no expectations. I just want to show up, enjoy the show, the movie, whatever, and evaluate it on my terms, not on somebody else's.
Yeah, I'm almost on a complete social media blackout right now because I have Picard on Friday, and I also watch the NASCAR season is starting, 2020 season, and I can watch the races on YouTube, but with a delay. NASCAR only puts that about a few days, about a week. Delay, so I don't want to watch, don't want to read anything about that either. So I'm pretty much on a complete social media blackout for the next
NASCAR
6 week. Yeah, I said NASCAR.
You don't have the right accent for it. No offense.
Yeah, but I tried, but I can't do the Southern accent. So.
No, it's cool.
Yeah, so I think what Andrew said last week, that they broke the, you know, the ideal world that they kind of built in the previous series. Although DS9 was a little bit darker than the other series, but basically in Next Gen, the world Earth was like a paradise and everything was great and everyone was nice and everything, and they kind of broke that a little. When you can see the Raffi living in her trailer outside and being depressed and things like that, and the Federation not being the ideal organization we knew in Next Gen,
they broke that, but yet they still put some hope and a nice thing. And as you said, you noticed that, and we said previously on pretty much all three previous episodes, the writing is just spot on. And there are things we are not sure that they made on purpose, but probably they did, and it was really, really well done. So far, four episodes in, great, great show.
Agreed.
And I also I like the fact that it is actually one big episode, one big story broken up in 10 parts, rather than just being 10 individual episodes with, you know, maybe a common story, but it's really one huge story. And I almost wonder if I'm not going to stitch all the episodes together in the end, you know, and
big
make
long
that
7.5 yeah. hour film.
Yeah,
yeah, or that's exactly what it is.
Maybe three things, but you can watch that in a thing. Every time an episode ends, I always wonder if it's a joke or anything, because it seems like there's only 10 minutes.
It's only 10 minutes. And forgive this little tangent here, but so the multi-episode arcs, like in Star Trek, so for instance, like the in Next Generation, like you had Redemption, Unification, Best of Both Worlds, Time Zero. I find I am less inclined to watch those multi-arcs, like in just at a sitting. Like if I go to sit down to watch Star Trek, I want to watch something. I tend to stay away from those because I can't commit to more than 40 minutes of ish, you know, you know what I mean? So I wonder if that's going to affect the rewatchability of Star Trek Picard for me, maybe not for somebody else, but for me, because I can't just sit down and watch one, I'll have to binge watch them all. And because that seems daunting, I won't watch it. Does that make any sense? Does that sound like a crazy?
Yeah.
Like I'm
totally.
Maybe...
No, that makes a lot of sense. We had the similar question when we first started watching 24. We started watching 24 when season 4 came out, I think it was. So we went to binge watch the first season, which is 18 hours end to end. And I think we watched it over the space of like 3 days. We didn't have kids then.
Right.
We watched the whole thing in 3 days. And yeah, it was surprisingly easy to do, I have to say, because you get to the end of the first episode and you're like, man, what's going to happen next? And so you watch the next one.
Exactly.
And before you know it, it's dark outside.
Yeah. 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 The first season I watched as they were produced, mm-hmm. I got them from some shady source. But yeah, it was hard to, you know, when you end up the end of the hour, you're like, but because managed to have some sort of cliffhanger at the end of every hour. But it was great. And so back to Picard, they managed to do almost the same thing. At the end of each episode, there's like a little cliffhanger, and I want more.
Yeah.
But back to what you were saying, Nate, that you know, you have like a 45 minutes attention span. I think that's because we're all geeks, and we all watch a lot of series, and then you get used to the 45 minutes format, after which you can, you know, stand up, go to the fridge, get a beer, a pizza, and do something else, and come back to
and then watch the next one.
But yeah, I know that when I watch some movie, I look at the length of the movie and I say, that's 2 hours. Maybe not.
Mm. What I'll do is
also maybe because I start watching my movies at 1 o'clock in the morning. But
that could be a contributing factor. I know when I started watching, I can't remember what it was, Lost in Space on Netflix. That's kind of related. Space, you know, the Final Frontier.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll let you.
Okay. I started doing, like, I did laundry while watching it. So I can't just sit. I'm kind of a busybody. And so I filled that time. And, you know, I got a lot of laundry done. And then actually I was done with the laundry. And there's still more episodes left. And I'm like, well, don't know what to do now. I have to do something. I can't just stand here. And then, so I had to wait till next weekend when I could binge again on it. So,
yeah. Yeah, that's what I when I watch a series that I'm maybe not too much into, or maybe it's a rerun of something. I often have my phone next to me and I, you know, read an email, do some stuff while I watch that. I never did that watching an episode of Picard so far.
No.
I did have a laptop on my lap so I could memory alpha certain things. So I did let me look that up. Okay, I remember that. You know, so I was doing, checking my Elcar's database, I suppose.
Yeah.
Accessing Romulan classified information.
Yes.
Yeah, so great, great series so far. Hopefully the end of the first season will be as good as the beginning. There's no reason to think that it won't be. The team is doing an awesome job.
They are. They really are. And I think when it comes to the end of the series, if I don't find myself screaming and shouting, throwing things at the telly, then I'd be disappointed.
Yeah. Well, when Picard is finished, we're going to review Threshold, so you have something to look for.
I'll probably still end up shouting and throw things at the telly, but for different reasons.
And then there's season 3 of Discovery coming up.
Yes.
So
I'm looking forward to that because no one knows where it's going.
No. And if they write that, although it's already, is it already done? No, they started production, I think. But if they, you know, they use Picard as a reference to how it should be done, and they do something similar with season 3 of Discovery, and then maybe Star Trek Pike and Star Trek Section 31 and things like that, then the series to come are going to be great. Hopefully.
It's a learning process for them as much as it is for us.
Yeah.
Because Discovery was the first of the new order of Star Trek, and clearly they've had lots and lots of feedback about how the production of Discovery has been received. If they've applied those learnings to Picard, then I can think of no reason why they wouldn't continue to apply those learnings for the future series. And if they don't, I'd be surprised and disappointed.
Yeah. Something else that made this episode great is that it was directed by someone we know and love, Mr. Jonathan Frakes himself.
Well, that's no surprise.
I didn't know that.
That's actually, you know, when you skip the credits on Prime, you end up with the last frame of the credits, and it was written directed by Jonathan Frakes. So, no wonder it was a good episode.
Spoiler alert, so's next week's.
Yay. That's nice. So we're looking forward for next week then.
Yeah, definitely.
So is that a sign that we should end this week's episode?
I think so. I think we're good.
So thanks to everyone who downloaded our previous episodes. You can help us make the world aware of our existence by planting a flag with the name of our show at the top of Mount Everest. Or maybe if that's a little bit easier for you, just by sharing the address of our website on various social media.
And of course, once you've done Everest, then, you know, feel free to do one on the moon as well.
Yeah.
You can find our website over at teaearlgreyhot.org, where you can also leave a comment for the episodes that we have produced so far. And we'd like to give a shout out to Alan for doing just that on the Maps and Legends episode.
Yes. Thank you, Alan. You can also send us an email. The address is feedback@teaearlgreyhot.org. We read everything we receive, and if we are so inclined and you don't tell us to do otherwise, we might end up reading your email on the show.
You can find us on social media. Our address on Twitter, Facebook, and Telegram is TEGH Podcast. And we're also on Mastodon, on the mastodon.social instance. Our address there, mastodon.social/@TEGH Podcast.
Thanks to Memory Alpha, as always. We have based our review of this week's episode on their work, and this is released under a Creative Commons by attribution non-commercial license.
The rest of this show, unless otherwise stated, is released under a Creative Commons by attribution share alike license, which means that you can do pretty much whatever you want to do with it as long as you credit us as the original authors. And if you publish something based on this episode, you have to release it under the same license.
Of course, this podcast is part of the Other Side Podcast Network. If you want to listen to other shows that the network carries, and that includes the show of our guest tonight on the show, because Nate is part of the Other Side Yay! Podcast Network with Maker's Corner, and also Mark's show, where Mark was in our YouTube chat room. That's Binary Times. It's a show about technology, free culture, and all those good stuff. So not really Star Trek things, but really interesting nonetheless.
If we ask them nicely, they might mention us on the next show. Next episode will be a review of Star Trek Picard, Episode 5, Stardust City Rag.
And that brings us to the conclusion of this week's episode. Thank you, Nate, for coming back to TR Greyheart. It was really nice to have you back with us.
It was wonderful to be here.
Always, whenever you want to come back, just tell us and we can have you back on the show, you know, in just like that. Like Q thing, you know, clap your hands and you appear on the show. Well, that's it for this week's episode. Thank you, Mark, for being in the chat room. Thank you, Nate, for joining us. Thank you, Dave, for being such a great co-host.
My pleasure. And yes, I am.
We will be back next week with a whole bunch more of Star Trek. In the meantime, take care of yourselves. Ciao, ciao.
See ya.
See yous.
You've been listening to a member of the Other Side Podcast Network. Find more about our shows at otherside.network.